Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff and I'm delighted to have you with me today. It's a really great day, and today I'm in Memphis, Tennessee, actually. So it's nice with the internet and the telephone system working pretty much globally. We can all move around, not just you, but me too sometimes. So today we're going to talk about acupuncture, and we have a very interesting lady with us who's actually my acupuncturist, and I like her very much. Before we get started, I wanted to play a little bit about our sponsor. This program is brought to you every week by the VHL Family Alliance as a public service, and we hope that you'll learn a bit about VHL and also help to support this program and the work of the VHL Family Alliance. VHL stands for von Hippel-Lindau disease, and I'm going to play you a little bit about it, and then we'll be back to talk with our guest, Dorothy Boehm.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
Thanks for listening, and we're back to talk today about acupuncture. And the Western approach to medicine tends to be you need to get a diagnosis through various kinds of tests, and once that's confirmed, then you can approach the problem at the particular chemical level or molecular level with some kind of drug. And this is a good approach for many kinds of things. It depends, of course, what you're trying to do. But there are some parts of our medical experience that are very difficult for Western medicine to deal with. And what I've found is that Eastern medicine helps to plug the gap. So I'd like to introduce you to you today, Dorothy Boehm. Welcome, Dorothy.
Hello.
Hi, and Dorothy is an acupuncturist who practices here in Brookline, Massachusetts. But you have been in nursing for, what, 20-some-odd years?
Yes, I have. A lot of my experience has been in psychiatric nursing.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, I do have a lot of training in Western medicine through my nursing career, so I'm able to approach my acupuncture from both perspectives.
What got you interested in studying acupuncture?
Well, I've always been interested in the concept of qi, or qi, can be spelled either qi or chi, which is a kind of electrical internal energy in the body. And that's probably not in most people's belief systems, but a lot of people have heard of people studying various martial arts or doing something called Tai Chi or Qi Kung. And a lot of those get into the area of dealing with this internal energy. In acupuncture, it's believed that this internal energy travels in specific pathways in the body that are called meridians. And when you do acupuncture, you're putting needles in specific points which have been found over 2,000 or 3,000 years to activate certain properties on those meridians.
Right, and this is something that this electrical system, if you will, in the body is something that the Western doctors tend to poo-poo because they can't put their fingers on it. They're looking for where is this in the dissection of something. And you said there's some new theories about exactly how qi does travel in our bodies.
Well, some modern thinkers think that it travels in the fascia. The fascia is a very thin kind of membrane or tissue under the skin, and it lines everything in the body. It's like one continuous sheet. It lines every muscle and every organ. It wraps around everything. And so that's one theory of how acupuncture can affect the whole body, and how if you put a needle in one place, it can affect a distant part of the body.
Mm-hmm. Because we're all connected, basically.
Well, if this fascia is connecting everything, that is one theory of where the meridians are and where the electrical energy is traveling through.
Mm-hmm. I remember once talking with a Chinese doctor about the after effects of surgery, and he was saying that when you have surgery, they necessarily cut down through these meridians, these pathways, that
yes.
the energy should flow. And because of that interruption, we have to do some special work to try to get the energy flowing correctly again.
Yes, there's some acupuncturists that do a lot of work on scars because they feel that the scars are interfering with the flow of the meridians. And there's some people who feel that not only acupuncture, but even massage works on the idea that you can have contractures that are affecting the fascia.
Mm-hmm.
And when it contracts, it will cause pain and stiffness.
Right,
and
these are like adhesions.
When
you heal, sometimes things stick together and heal together and get scarred together in a way
yes.
that they weren't originally.
Yes, and so you could even have, you know, people that have just minor degrees of fascial contracture and not even be that aware of it, just like mild little aches and pains. So acupuncture, or I also do acupressure, which is working with the same meridians and points, but with pressure from your fingers.
And not needles.
No. And so that's good for people that don't like needles. But it can accomplish the same thing, although for some reason it's not considered as effective as acupuncture, even though really it is.
Mm-hmm.
Although you can't do as many points at once that way because you only have 10 fingers. It can't be everywhere at once. But so one theory in acupuncture, most basic theory, is the pain is caused by a blockage in the flow of chi, and you're trying to unblock that flow of chi. And like when you're saying Western doctors don't believe in acupuncture, a lot of them will say, well, it's some kind of placebo effect. And then you say, well, it works on animals.
Right. Well, placebo effect is when if you believe it's going to work, then it'll feel like it's working even if it isn't.
Right, but you can do acupuncture on animals, so there can't be just the placebo effect.
Right, if it works on dogs and horses, then it's unlikely to be part of a belief system.
That's right, because they don't know.
They don't believe in anything as far as that goes, yeah. They just know you're trying to comfort them, but it wouldn't stop the pain.
No.
Right.
But it's not, acupuncture isn't just for pain. It can also be for a lot more serious or deep-seated problems to do with things that in acupuncture are referred to as the organs. You can have problems to do with your respiration or your digestion or your urination.
Were there issues that you were running into in nursing that really led you to believe that you needed to add something from Eastern medicine to plug the gap?
Well, I could see that a lot of Western treatments didn't seem to work that well, which nowadays really comes down to a lot of times either surgery or pharmacology. And you can see in a lot of cases that it's not like a cure-all.
Right.
Like in psychiatry, you know, there's people that they take strong medications, and I mean, it does help, but they're still mentally ill. or they still have relapses. Or I think partly I became interested in it because there's a lot of people like myself that have kind of subclinical problems, like I'm very chemically sensitive, and it's going to be a long time to figure out what I needed for myself, and I could see that Western medicine wasn't really there for me. And, and so I became more interested in alternative health. And then my son had asthma, and I took him to an acupuncture clinic, and he was having a major attack every 3 weeks. And after, well, they treated him with acupuncture and dietary approach, and he never had another major attack.
Oh, for heaven's sake. So he went from having an attack every 3 weeks to having no more attacks at all?
He had to use an inhaler once in a while, but nothing major.
Wow, that's incredible. And that's a combination, you said, of nutritional changes and acupuncture.
Yes. So right. I could see, you know, that it really worked.
Right. One of the people that you studied with, I heard, goes regularly to Africa to help teach doctors and nurses how to do symptomatic relief, even for people with AIDS.
Yes, he founded that project maybe 5 years ago or longer, and it's been an ongoing thing. And he has talked about how he trains people there to do acupuncture, and it seems like a very successful project. And people will walk for miles and miles to come there to be treated. And it sounds very successful, and it's been going on for quite a while.
Right, and clearly this is not a cure for AIDS, but it is improving people's quality of life because it's giving them some relief from their symptoms.
Yes, that's right. And there are a lot of side effects but symptoms from AIDS that if they could help, it would really improve the quality of the life.
Right. So this was a good example for me that with all kinds of different conditions, you might be able to apply a little acupuncture here and there just to give you some symptomatic relief, which is all to the good. It's, for me, it's relaxation, it's unbinding muscle cramps in various places of my body, and really I think keeping me from needing any higher intervention for things like a knee that could progress to needing a knee replacement, but I keep it under control, a lower back that I just sort of nurse along and it doesn't need anything more than that. It may just be relieving its symptoms, but it certainly is keeping me going.
Well, I've read that Western medicine is reconsidering the wisdom of a lot of these back surgeries, that the people don't seem to do any better who've had the surgeries than people who haven't.
Right.
So to my way of thinking, if you can get along without getting to the point where you need surgery, that's a good thing.
Yes.
Especially because also you can pick up so many infections in the hospital, and not all surgeries are a success. Some people have surgery and wish they never had it.
Right. So it's very interesting to think about what acupuncture might be able to do to enhance what you're doing. It's not a matter of either or. You can have the Western medicine plus some Eastern medicine,
definitely.
That can be a very happy combination.
Yes. You were speaking about this project in Africa. Where I went to school, the New England School of Acupuncture, years ago they founded this clinic called the AIDS Care Project here in Boston. Mm-hmm. And it was to treat people with AIDS for their side effects. And it's been going for a long time. And more recently, they expanded it to include more general acupuncture. Now it's called Pathways. But over the years, they've treated a lot of people who are taking the medications, the Western medications for AIDS, but they're treating the side effects and making these people more comfortable.
Right. So sometimes when we talk about alternative or complementary medicine, people think it's either or. You have to choose either to take the chemotherapy or to go take this herbal remedy in Mexico or something like that. And that's not what we're talking about at all. It's that you can add acupuncture on with your Western medications. It doesn't interfere with your medications, which is nice because it's not a medication.
That's right.
But it can help you with some of the symptoms, the nausea or whatever may be going along with the Western medicine that you need.
If you were taking Chinese herbs, you would have to check and see if there was an interaction, but needles themselves, there's no problem of it having any effect that's going to interfere with your Western treatment.
Great. So tell me about Chinese diagnosis, because it's very different. Tell us about that.
Well, for instance, say you had someone with a migraine headache, so it could be more due to more than one diagnosis. And the diagnosis that you would talk about would sound probably very strange unless you had any training because, say, for instance, in Chinese medicine, they talk about the liver, but it's not your Western liver, although some of the functions sound somewhat similar. But in Chinese medicine, the liver is responsible for maintaining the proper flow of qi and circulation of blood in the body. And one very common problem in, I don't know all around the world, but here anyway, is what they call liver qi stagnation. And it's kind of a chicken or the egg thing. You can either have depression and anger, which causes the stagnation, or it could be the other way around. But anyway, you end up with a situation where you have this kind of blocked up flow of energy, and it can generate a kind of heat which rises and can cause migraine headaches.
Hmm.
But then you could also have other problems, like Chinese have a concept of dampness and phlegm, where you have things accumulating in the body because you're not able to process them properly through your digestive system, or you could have an invasion of dampness from the outside. And that can accumulate in your head. That could be a cause of migraines, or you could have an injury to your head and cause a stagnation of blood and qi. So it could be more than one diagnosis, and the practitioner has to figure out what is causing the migraines so you can treat it.
So in order to figure this out, you look at things like the tongue and the eyes and the pulses?
Well, two of the basic diagnoses, or three. One is just asking the patient their symptoms and history. And so that can be thorough, like you're asking them, you know, what is your major complaint and what is your sleep like and your digestion, your excretion, your history of your menstrual periods if you're a woman, pretty detailed history. And then you would look at the tongue, and the tongue is almost like a muscle that you can look at in a way, but you look at the color of the tongue, the coating, whether it's swollen, whether it's pale or bright red or purple, whether it has a lot of cracks in it, whether it looks dried up or too wet, and that can tell you a lot about what's going on internally.
Hmm.
And then there's a pulse for each of the 12 meridians. There's six on each wrist. There's like two levels. So you feel the pulses. Feel if they're strong or weak, and then there's different qualities, like what they call a wiry pulse has to do with liver problems, and it feels almost too strong, or if it a damp pulse would feel like almost like it's underwater somehow.
Hmm. So like feeling a noodle or something.
Yeah, they say it feels like something moving through water.
Hmm.
So those are two of the major, and then also you look at things like the color of the skin, especially on the face. If it's very pale, that could be a lung problem, or if it's greenish, that could be a liver problem. If it's too red, that could be a kind of too much heat rising.
Interesting.
So, and the quality of the voice too, like if it's a very soft voice or if it's too loud. So there's a lot of people that are, not a lot, but there's people trying to do what they call acupuncture research, but in a way it kind of goes against the idea that in acupuncture you can have more than one diagnosis for the same problem. So if they're trying to do research into, say, somebody with high blood pressure and they're using the same points on everybody, it kind of goes against the idea that those people could have different causes for their high blood pressure and they would really need different points.
That's interesting in itself, because what you're saying is that for a particular problem, it's not like there's one magic solution, not like one pill, but there's a number of different ways that could have been affected, and you need to customize the treatment for the combination of factors you see in this individual.
Definitely. And there's more than one. To make it more confusing, there's different schools of acupuncture, and they don't all, not that they necessarily disagree, but the emphasis is often quite different. There's one called the Worsley method, where they believe that everyone has like one basic weakness, one organ or meridian, which is going to be like what they call the causative factor. So you have to learn to diagnose that person. Their causative factor is the heart, that one's the spleen, that one's the lung, and go from there. So they do a lot by listening to the quality of the voice, even how the body odor of the person. And they have a wider range of diagnostic tools than most acupuncturists use.
Right, and this is a system that's been developing, as you say, for some 3,000 years.
Yes, yes. And interestingly enough, there's some evidence that at one point in the times, say, of the shamans and the Celtics that built like the Stonehenge and structures like that, that acupuncture was known even in Europe. It wasn't just confined to China. Because maybe about 10 or 15 years ago, they found this man frozen in the Alps, and they dated him back to 6,000 years ago, I think. And his body was well preserved. It had just been frozen, and they noted that he had tattoos on certain parts of his body, and at first they thought they were some kind of tribal thing, but then an anthropologist who knew acupuncture realized that those tattoos were on acupuncture points, and that the points would have treated things they could tell that he had, like he had some damage to some of the discs in his back, and he had a lot of worms in his intestines, which were filled with charcoal, which they still use today for that problem. And because a tattoo would cause a constant low-level stimulation of that point, so they said they must have known about acupuncture to do that.
Right, and not necessarily having learned it from somebody else who brought that knowledge, but they could have independently figured out at least some portions of it.
Or it was just because supposedly at one point they believed there was a common shamanistic culture across Europe and into Asia and maybe even into North America. And they built these things like the Stonehenge in Ireland. There's structures that are somewhat similar. Like a client of mine just returned from a trip to Ireland, and they visited a stone structure in a mound that she said that in the solstice, the light from the sun will go in and illuminate this tunnel. So they were into the same ballpark of things.
Right, right. Very interesting. Now,
yeah.
What's the difference between Chinese acupuncture and Japanese acupuncture?
Well, one difference is that Chinese acupuncturists use much bigger needles. I mean, they're not huge, but they're thicker, and they put them in more deeply. And in Japanese acupuncture, they believe the meridians are more superficial, so the needles are finer and they don't put them in as deeply, but there's a big difference in emphasis. Like a Japanese acupuncturist will very carefully examine the skin along certain meridians, and And they use a mode of diagnosis where they press points in the abdomen. They kind of went off on their own tangent, but it's a very interesting one. But I use Japanese-style needles because I find them much more comfortable for the patients as well as for myself.
Right. Now, the Chinese ones are about like a horsehair, right?
Yeah, I mean, none of them are that big, but
they're
big enough so that when you put them in, the difference can be felt. And some people find the Chinese ones too uncomfortable.
Right. So these are, don't picture a nail, don't even picture a hypodermic needle. These are much narrower than both.
Yeah, it's more in the idea of a hair. I can't tell you the size.
So if the Chinese ones are like a horsehair, these are even finer than that, Japanese ones.
Yeah.
So very tiny and must be very flexible also.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Japanese ones, you use an insertion tube, they call it, so you're pushing the needle. The tube is flush against the skin, and pushing the needle through the tube also makes a much more comfortable insertion.
So more or less like a blowgun?
Something like that, yeah.
With a little plunger thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. But that way it goes in straight and just the distance that you want it to go.
Definitely, yeah.
Right. And then do you sometimes rotate the needles or vibrate them in some way?
Sometimes. The Chinese always do that. In Japanese, that's not considered so important. Sometimes I do it with the energy from my hands because I can feel the energy over points before I needle them, and then when I put the needle in, I can feel energy over the needle, and if I move my hand over it, it stimulates the energy through the needle into the point. So I prefer to do it that way.
Right, but not like plucking them or anything, just kind of running your hand near them or
against them?
Over
the top of them, yeah. Although sometimes I'll move them a little bit.
Okay, so more or less like you were running your hand through someone's hair?
Yeah, except over the top of the needle, not necessarily touching the needle.
Uh-huh. Okay,
that's sort of my own personal technique. Not too many people do it that way. A lot of people do twirl the needles.
Mm-hmm. I went to a Chinese acupuncturist once who used a little electronic machine to kind of vibrate them.
Oh, yeah, I do that. I use that more for men because they seem to need stronger stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have an electroacupuncture machine. It just seems a little mechanistic.
So it vibrates the needles, and there's a sort of ultrasound procedure that is used in physical therapy that's similar, right?
Yeah, the machine that I have, you can either use it for acupuncture or as what they call a TENS machine, which is something that physical therapists use more, which I've never used it for that. But I think it's another kind of vibration. But you don't use needles with it. You use pads.
Right. Deep muscle stimulation or some such thing.
Yeah.
Right. So very interesting that all of these technologies are sort of trying to accomplish the same thing in a number of different ways. And some of them work better on certain circumstances and some of them don't. But it is a modality that's worth trying, especially if you have... What I've found for me, at least, is that it's the sort of neuromuscular things that respond best to acupuncture, in my experience. Is that true?
Well, I think it's the most straightforward thing to treat because you're working with the meridians themselves to move the energy. When I first started, before I studied acupuncture, I studied acupressure.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first began, it wasn't totally in my belief system, even though I was studying it.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I went to the school where I was studying acupressure, and I had this pain by my scapula from sleeping wrong, and I've been, like, aching all day.
And your scapula is what, your shoulder blade?
Yeah. And so there was this young man who was teaching there who was really talented, and I said, oh, I've had this cramp by my scapula all day. Could you do something? So I wasn't facing him, and he touched this point on my arm. He said, is it still there? And I said, yes. And second point, yes. The third point, he just touched it, and it disappeared like it had never been there.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it either, but that's what happened. So I said, well, this stuff really works.
Yeah.
And it wasn't anything to do with deep pressure or, you know, strong stimulation. He just touched the right point.
Right. So even if you bring your skepticism, it can still be beneficial.
Yeah. So that convinced me that, you know, this worked.
Right. Well, I think, too, that sort of neuromuscular stuff is the hardest for Western medicine to treat, because they'll do physical therapy or they'll do pain medications. But almost invariably, if you have a muscle pull or something like that, it'll last 6 or 8 weeks. Whereas with Chinese medicine, it seems to go much more to the source of it and fix it up much more rapidly.
I think so. I mean, I think it can certainly do a good job. If something is like a new thing, you know, like you twisted your ankle or some new ache or pain, it's easier to treat. The more chronic and long standing it is, the longer it's going to take probably to make it better. So it's not always like a quick fix type of thing.
Right.
But acupuncture can work. I had a friend who, her cat had liver failure, and her vets expected it was not going to live. The poor cat had a little NG tube and a funnel so it wouldn't bat it out, and they were putting water. And the poor cat was just lying there. So I looked in this book I have of animal acupuncture, because sometimes it's hard to think of where the points are in the animal. And I worked in these points for the liver, and the cat recovered. So I don't know, the vet said that she was really amazed that the cat recovered, and my friend always says I cured her cat. So I don't know if that's true, but animal acupuncture is a thing that there is. They call it veterinarian acupuncture, and some vets are trained in it.
So. Right, because in farming cultures, obviously the life of the entire family could depend on the health of the horse or the cow.
Yeah, when you look in a catalog of acupuncture equipment, like they'll have dogs and cats, and then for the Chinese and people, they have models of pigs and cows, so you know they're doing it on their farm animals.
Sure.
And I knew a man once who did, he was doing acupuncture on racehorses.
Uh-huh.
And he said, they don't care about the theory, they just know it works on their horses, so.
Right, so we don't even have to understand this to benefit from it. We don't have to believe in it, you don't have to understand it. You just give it a try.
Well, another way I became interested is I've been studying martial arts for a long time. Like I've been studying Tai Chi and Qigong for a long time. Before that, Aikido, and those depend on using Qi. So for people who are interested in experiencing Qi, Tai Chi is a nice way to do that.
Right. So and Tai Chi is a sort of exercise discipline, right?
Yes, but it's very beneficial for anyone because it teaches you how to align your body in a beneficial way so that you get the optimum flow of qi in your spine. It's aligned properly in your muscles, so it is very beneficial for overall health.
Mm-hmm. And it's gentle movements. It's not like calisthenics or something.
No.
Right. It's, sometimes when you see these pictures of groups of Chinese people in the park in the morning, that they're out there doing their Tai Chi exercises.
Yeah, it is kind of inspiring to see that they all go out and do that.
Yeah.
that it's such an integral part of the culture.
Right, and when I was in China, I did see groups out doing these kinds of group activities. And it's part of their team building, too, and the culture of interdependence that they have. Great. Let's take a little break here, and we'll be right back, and we'll take a call in just
okay.
a second.
This is Keith Richards, a.k.a. Just Saying. Is there cancer in your family? There is in mine. But it doesn't have to be bad. We can take action to protect ourselves. I've learned how to get screened and manage my health so that I'll live a long, healthy life. How about you? Visit www.powerfulpatient.org. Again, that's www.powerfulpatient.org. Peace.
Thanks. We're back here. We're talking with Dorothy Boehm about acupuncture. I know I've traveled to 26 different countries now to talk with people about von Hippel-Lindau disease, and I was hoping when we went to Japan and China that we would find that there was something in Chinese herbal medicine or acupuncture that would wreak its magic on people with VHO. And no such luck, but certainly there's a tremendous amount of symptomatic relief that can be gotten from these, and also just the science of nutrition that goes along with it, and the bolstering of the herbals can be very beneficial for VHL and lots of other conditions.
Do they treat VHL? I know in China they have hospitals that are devoted to Chinese medicine.
Yes, and I went to a Chinese medicine clinic, and they didn't know it by that name, so we haven't made the connection yet. And it was very interesting that the Western-trained doctors who are Chinese, and I spoke with a group of them, one group in Guangzhou and one group in Beijing, and I asked them about the use of acupuncture. And it was interesting to me that I think they think that they need to reject the traditional medicine in order to be a proper Western-trained doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very interesting to see a kind of divide between the Western-trained doctors who have much the same opinions about acupuncture that you would find here in the U.S. But there's an increasing number of U.S. Western-trained doctors now who are embracing a certain amount of acupuncture in their practice because they're seeing its value.
Yeah, they seem to be more willing to suggest, well, maybe you should try it, because I've had some patients come and they say, well, my doctor thought I should try acupuncture, which is different than how it probably was 10 or 20 years ago when at one point it was illegal in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so that certainly changed. And there, Western doctors can actually take like a 600-hour course, which is really short, and do acupuncture. But unfortunately, with that small amount of training, they probably don't know enough to be good acupuncturists.
Right. Right. In China, you have to get your MD sort of first, and then you get trained in acupuncture. So it's quite a long training cycle in China.
Is that right?
Yeah. So
well,
if they were going to
treat the disease with tumors, they would probably give it a Chinese diagnostic name.
Yes.
If they believe that any kind of tumor is a kind of damp accumulation, and it would fit under that category.
Hmm. Interesting.
Which basically just means it's something that the body's accumulating that it can't process properly.
Right. We have Mary Lou on the line with us. Mary Lou, did you have a question you wanted to ask Dorothy?
Yeah, I guess I have a question for Dorothy and for Joyce. I had the acupuncture done on my shoulder, and it really felt good after a day or two, and then it just came back, the pain again. So I wonder if it's something that you need to do on an ongoing basis, like once a week, or the way I'm sitting, or what, I don't know.
Well, probably.
I was thinking maybe the mouse, too. I was talking to Dorothy about this, too.
Right, right.
Well, probably, typically, if it, usually one treatment will not address something that's fairly severe, and the treatments are believed to be cumulative. So if you had a series of treatments, it would probably help more than just one treatment. And then some people, something is resolved, and then maybe they'll come once a month or something for a tune-up and see how things go from there. But I try and tell people when they come in, this isn't magic, and one treatment is probably not going to cure you, because people have a really strange idea that this is something that, you know, you just put in a few needles and it will go away forever.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, usually, I mean, I have had a few miracle cases, but usually it doesn't work that way.
Right, and you were saying there might be, in part, the fault of using the mouse with that hand. And that sort of repetitive stress injury means that you're constantly re-injuring it. So you, at the same time that you're fixing the injury, you also need to reduce the re-injury that you're doing to yourself. Change the way you're moving, change the way you're sitting, change the position of the mouse on the desk or on the tray or something like that. You really need to look at the ergonomics of it and not re-injure yourself.
Yeah, when people come to me, I try more and more now to look at how they're standing and how they're walking and how they're using the part of the body that is causing the pain, and try and see. Because the more I study Tai Chi, which I've been doing for a number of years now, the more I'm conscious of how you can be doing things wrong with your body and not be aware of it at all, and it's not even that obvious, but it's there, and it can be causing you discomfort and over a period of time doing damage to your joint or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Things just like standing on one foot, you know, and looking, those elegant poses that the actresses sometimes get into. You have to put one foot in front of another and look very delicate. But that balancing on one foot over a long period of time itself can injure your lower back.
Well, yeah, that sounds possible. But it can also just be like the way people sit. Like people tend to droop their bodies a little bit, whereas
mm-hmm.
if they learned how to use their muscles and hold themselves up more, it would cause a lot less stress in the low back. Or the way they're, like if you're using your mouse and you're not moving your arm in the optimal way, it can stretch your shoulder joint. So it's really worthwhile to look at those things.
Right. I've had a couple of experiences, one with a very severe problem and one with a problem that, thanks to you, never got off the ground. I had a problem in my hip, and I was told actually that it was arthritis. And
it's a really general term as far as I'm concerned.
Right. So they said it was arthritis, and they said, you're getting older. Now, I was in my 40s at the time. I didn't consider that old. But anyway, I thought I was going to have to live with this pain for the rest of my life. Excuse me. And then somebody suggested I try acupuncture. So I did. I went to a little Chinese doctor who specialized in sports medicine and actually does for lots of football players all over the United States. And he treated it weekly for, I think, best part of a year. And partway through the year, he said to me, you know what? This is not arthritis. There's nothing wrong with your bones. It's this deep congestion in your backside. And one of the things I learned was that our bottoms are the second most popular place that we store tension in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
That we
first
store it in
shoulders.
Our shoulders. We're used to dealing with shoulders and neck, but we also store it in our bottoms.
Well, that's really interesting, because I hadn't really heard that. But as far as I'm concerned, you can store tension almost anywhere, but that would
mm-hmm.
make sense, because you're, especially if you sit a lot, just everything is going down to that area.
Right. and it was congested chi that mm-hmm. was all in my buttock, and that right at the origin of the sciatic nerve. And the sciatic nerve evidently travels from there to your big toe.
Yeah, it goes all the way down.
Right. And what we finally figured out was the source of the problem was that I had a 42-mile one-way commute, and I was sitting there with my right leg flexed on the accelerator for 2 hours a day. And so the next car I got had a cruise control.
Uh-huh.
And I've learned to manage the problem. So, but that did take about a year to get it down off of the acute phase and so forth. But last summer, I was in a little trolley accident and got shaken up quite badly, got thrown about 10 feet, didn't break anything. But I was afraid I was going to have big repercussions from it. So I went to Dorothy that very day, and I said, what can we do sort of prophylactically, you know, to try to prevent the worst consequences of this shakeup? And so she did some very nice things that reduced the bruising and reduced the impact, and I really never got particularly sick from it, so I was really glad of that. Thank you.
Well, thank you. That was really smart, though, because the quicker you can treat something, the less entrenched it's going to get. The less, you might say, you know, the less contracture in the fascia, maybe, or however you look at it, it's going to be able to be treated much more easily the earlier you address it.
Right. It was really interesting to me to see you can actually feel sometimes the congested chi, that it like a big knot in the muscle.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's this fascial contraction, maybe. It might not even be in the muscle. It might be in the fascia. But
uh-huh. And the fascia is like a skin around the muscle.
Yeah. I mean, it could be in the muscle, too, but mm-hmm. Not necessarily.
But interesting that they're finally realizing how the sort of electrical wiring stuff works.
Yeah. I mean, also that it's becoming a little more accepted even by what maybe there is this electrical stuff. Because
mm-hmm.
in my Tai Chi class, there are several doctors that are in the class, for instance. So there's some people that are getting interested in the idea.
Right. So what's the difference between Tai Chi and Qigong?
It's just sort of like a different subject. It's the same movements. It's a matter of emphasis. Like, Tai Chi is, like in my school, we have what's called a short form and a long form. The long form can take something like 35 or 40 minutes to do if you do it slowly. And some people prefer Qigong because you're focusing more specifically on a small number of repetitive movements that might teach you really basic things. But they're similar in that they're teaching you how to align your body and improve mm-hmm. your posture and improve your balance and get the chi moving. So they all do the same thing. It's just a kind of difference in emphasis on the different movements.
So it's about alignment and coordination and strength as well?
Well, you are strengthening some muscles, but I'd say it's more to do with learning how to align your body properly. The specific school I study in, ultimately you're trying to learn how to make more space in your joints, which not all schools emphasize. The alignment of your body is considered more emphasized in my school. And also how to pump fluids in your joints and in your body, which has to do not just with qi, but with more general health benefits. Probably it might have to do with pumping fluids in and out of the fascia.
Right.
Getting back to the fascia, but it seems to make sense to me. And I've learned a technique to do with that, that if you have, if somebody has pain in the joint, you can learn to move the, say it was in their shoulder, you would start at the wrist and then the elbow and then the shoulder joint, gently moving the joints back and forth to pump the fluids in the fascia. And patients have told me, oh, I can feel that in my shoulder, it feels really good. Or a couple of people have told me they feel it, their sinuses are starting to drain, which would make sense in terms of the system, because there's supposed to be a channel that goes all the way up through the sinuses. So that's one thing that in my Tai Chi school we learn is this thing about moving, pumping the fluids in the joints.
Right. So one of the challenges in acupuncture, in saying, okay, I'm going to try acupuncture, how do you find a good practitioner? Can you give people some idea of how they would go about finding someone who's better than a poorly trained acupuncture practitioner? Are there licenses?
Well, they say the best advertising is word of mouth, but if you don't know anyone who can recommend someone, like in this area, some people, the acupuncture school I graduated with has a list of graduates and practitioners. I don't really know the magic system of finding a good one, because
so starting with a reputable school and getting a list from there. But ultimately, even with the right paperwork behind them, people differ, and so you're probably just going to have to try someone and see if you're comfortable with them.
Yeah, because everyone develops their own kind of specialties and their own ways of doing things, and it's probably just like, say, going to a therapist or something, you're going to click more with one person than another.
Right.
So
and there are different methods. Some of them are more manipulative than others, but personally, I enjoy acupuncture because I find it very relaxing, and that's really part of the treatment, because you're supposed to get your body to relax and let its fluids and electrical system and everything flow correctly. You know, we're made up of, 70 or 80% water.
Right, right.
So if you think of your body as a kind of ongoing river, making sure that it doesn't get hung up here and there, it really does make a lot of sense.
Well, one of my teachers in school once said that acupuncture taps into a level of the chi which is just very relaxing. So if nothing else, it should be relaxing.
Right.
Maybe because of my background as a psychiatric nurse, besides treating a lot of people just for pain, I do treat a lot of people for psychiatric things like depression and stress, because acupuncture works very well with that, partly because of the relaxation effect. So that's another thing that I...
What other kinds of things are you treating?
Well, I have people that have depression, or sometimes, you know, it's depression related to physical things like fibromyalgia and ongoing pain, but some people are just stressed or depressed, and acupuncture relieves that.
Great. So pain, muscle strains, depression and emotional problems sometimes have physical roots that we can't even put our fingers on, that the Eastern medicine might be able to tap in a way that Western medicine doesn't.
Right, so, and some people also have chronic insomnia and things like that, which contribute to depression, and acupuncture can help with that. In fact, a lot of people say when I finish, oh, I wish I could just go to sleep right here on the table.
Well, you mentioned you were thinking about having an insomnia service.
Right. I am, seriously, because then if I treated them in their home, they could just go to sleep. Because if they get a treatment and then they're nice and sleepy, then they have to get up and go home.
Right.
So then they get wide awake again.
Right. Well, thank you, Dorothy. This has been really great. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much, too.
Any other last words that you'd like to leave with people?
Don't be afraid of needles. They're very fine needles. Some people say, oh, I couldn't stand the idea of needles, but it's nothing like the needle that you get for an injection or a blood draw. They're, you know, way, way, way smaller than that. And if you really can't stand needles, you could think in terms of someone who does acupressure.
Right, where they're just stimulating with their fingers the same
right.
points that are stimulated normally with
needles.
With these very fine needles.
Yep.
Great. And Dorothy's website is www.dorothyboehme.com, and her last name is spelled B-O-I-M-E.
M as in Massachusetts, or Mary.
Right.
And it's all one word, Dorothy Boehme, DorothyBoehme.com.
Great. And we will have a handout at powerfulpatient.org. You can go to powerfulpatient.org and hear the replay from this show and pick up the handout that we'll have in it, Dorothy's website and other information that you might want to have with you and to think about how you might use acupuncture or acupressure as a complement to what you're already doing to maintain your health. So I hope everybody has a great week. Next week we are going to talk with Reg Green, who is the head of the Nicholas Green Foundation. His son Nicholas Green died in a robbery attempt, actually, in Italy some 15 years ago, and the family decided to donate his organs to other people who needed them. And actually 7 people are alive today because of those donations. And so he's been campaigning for the last 15 years for organ donation, and he's going to share with us some very poignant stories about organ donation and how one can make a contribution even after you don't need your body anymore. Somebody else might benefit from it very much. So be with us next week to talk about organ donation. And meanwhile, I hope that you will have a great week and be well and be a powerful patient. Thanks very much, Dorothy. And
thank
you, everybody, for being with us. And we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.